And good morning. It is 10 minutes after 8 o'clock, 46 degrees right here on Palmetto Mornings. Glad to have you with us on WRHIFM 100.1, your home for news, talk, and sports. I'm Patty Mercer.
And I'm Lucas McFadden. Hello to our listeners on AM 1340, those listening on the free WRHI app, watching us on Comporium Cable Channel 103, as well as Facebook Live.
Well, you know, Lucas, COVID-19 has been with us for a full year. Yeah. And over 525,000 lives have been lost. I mean, we've talked about COVID so much, but there's a lot about this pandemic that is yet to be seen. What will it look like? What will be the economic impact, the psychological impact? Those are some big social consequences that we're asking. Joining us this morning, Dr. Angelo McLean. He's the CEO of the National Association of Social Workers. He's with us this morning to talk about this impact in terms of social consequences. Good morning, Dr. McLean.
Good morning, Patty. Good morning, Lucas.
Now, millions of people are out of work. Public health experts hope that we'll reach herd immunity by the fall or maybe even as early as the summer. But the social consequences of the pandemic, they're going to be affecting us for years. Do you think it's too soon to celebrate that we're over this pandemic?
I think we should be celebrating the fact that we do have the vaccines, that it didn't take 5 years to produce them as we were thinking a year ago. You know, there's so much loss. We have to mourn the loss of all the lives across the globe, then just the loss of our daily lives. And when it is time to celebrate that we're out of the pandemic, we won't realize it. Like on March 11th, a year ago, we understood that we were pivoting into a different time. It's going to be a gradual, you know, returning back to some type of normalcy.
And Dr. McLean, how can social workers, or what would be the role of social workers to help us continue cope with the after effects of the pandemic while still trying to move forward?
Well, social workers are going to continue doing what they've been doing. Take mental health, for instance. You know, a lot of that has been online or through Zoom or video conferencing, and some of it has continued to be face-to-face. We actually, with the telehealth, the teletherapy, we've seen the no-show rates go way down. So there are actually more people accessing mental health services now than we've been seeing with children. And when we look at the claims from insurance companies, that there are more children needing mental health services. So there'll be that work. And then the work of people who've lost incomes, lost jobs, you know, trying to help them get back on their feet. You know, the rents. Some of the rents that have been deferred, those are going to come due, and how people are going to make those payments. And we'll be there to help people navigate the system to figure out where there's help for that. And then if you think about our seniors who've been isolated and who've lost loved ones, you know, I just heard of a couple. The wife was 93. The husband was 89. She died from COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, people like that who survived, and how we help them with loss and grieving, and there's not been proper loss and grieving through all this.
Wow. You know, it really is sad. We have to remember that, you know, we've been tracking numbers for the last year, but every number represents a person, and it's devastating. In fact, 40% of Americans are struggling with anxiety and depression. What has been, I guess, the contributing factor? Has it been the isolation or just this feeling of not knowing, the unknown is often scary? What do you find is the cause for so much anxiety and depression?
Well, it's the, if you think back to a year ago and the unemployment rate, we shot up into the double digits, you know, overnight. People were afraid they're going to lose their jobs, afraid they weren't going to be able to feed their families, pay the mortgages. So just that anxiety of, you know, I was doing good. We almost had 3 months of salary saved up for emergencies, and then all of a sudden that's all gone. Then you're worried about getting sick. Then you're worried about possibly getting your loved ones, friends, or neighbors sick. And then, you know, we don't know. We were told 2 weeks and to flatten the curve. Then we were told just 30 more days to flatten the curve. And no one ever said just 365 days. So it's all that uncertainty. And then we have a rhythm to our lives where, you know, I'm at home with my wife, my children, and I'm apart from them for a while. I go to work. You know, I can kind of decompensate from, you know, drive from home to work and kind of get my head together. So just in some families, you're living in cramped living conditions and you've got, you know, two or three or four children trying to do work, you know, their schoolwork from home, or a parent trying to work. And so you're almost fighting over who gets to use the internet service because you can't, you don't have the bandwidth for four people to be logged on.
Yeah, that can create a lot of stress in the homes. In fact, studies are also showing the rates of domestic violence have increased. And then on the other side of that, the amount of calls about it seem to be on the decline. Those two numbers don't seem to match up.
Yeah, it's really been it's been heartbreaking. You know, right out the bat, in Wuhan, the rate of domestic violence was threefold, and so we knew early on that it was going to be an issue. And one of the things is the abuser is at home all the time. The person who's being abused is at home all the time. You can't get away. You don't have access to your friends and your natural support systems who might encourage you to make a phone call or encourage you to make some decisions about how to protect yourself. And you're 24/7 under the watch and control of the abuser. And the abusers use, you know, emotional control, financial control, you know, physical control. And then you can't, you know, sneak into the bathroom or out in the backyard to try to make a phone call, you know, for help. So we know once on the other side of the pandemic that those hotlines and those calls are going to go up.
That's very frightening. And in terms of a social worker, how do you get a social worker? How do you connect with the needs in a community?
I think your question is how can a person connect to a social worker?
Exactly. Yes.
There are multiple ways. A lot of the communities have a 211 where you can call that number and ask, you know, and just get directed to help, 211. We have a website called helpstartshere.org, and that helpstartshere.org, we have a social work finder there, and there's a lot of resources for community members, just sort of if you're looking for a therapist, or if you're looking for information about how to take care of your parents or your children, there's that kind of information there.
That is wonderful. So that's help.
In worst case scenario, Google social services in your town. And something will come up and you can start getting help.
Well, fantastic. Great information. I know a lot of our listeners are probably, we know with the things, the social consequences, I'm sure everybody can relate to some part of being impacted by this pandemic. Thank you so very much, Dr. McLean, of course, and the service that you provide, CEO of the National Association of Social Workers. Helpstartshere.org to find some help if you feel that you also are continuing to deal with the after effects of COVID-19. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on National COVID-19 Day. I appreciate it.